The hole that I'm thinking of is one of the most beautiful par fours on tour. A big downhill, scary tee shot with mountains in the
background. Hole three. No.
Mountains in the background?
Mountains in the background. Usually we're seeing more than just green on the trees as we tee off.
I know.
18 at Fox Run.
Beautiful. Eagle, you are the inaugural champion. Oh.
Put one in the Eagle column. I got a point. Yeah. I'm stoked.
That's our new intro. We got the whole description, and whoever gets it first is the winner. So, Eagle, you're one up.
I'm one up.
How's it going, boys? We're back.
We are back. What episode's this? I'm already losing count.
Four in a row, baby.
Four in a row. Damn.
Impressive.
Very impressive, honestly. We're consistent, and that's the
goal
of this podcast.
And this was by far the fastest setup we've had. We were all ready, and we know what we're doing now. We're pros. Are we pro podcast? I can't speak. I'm not a pro speaker. I'm a pro podcaster.
I think we're pros at episode 8.
I agree.
We're halfway there. Halfway to being pros.
Well, we have no host today who competed in a tournament last weekend, but Simon was at the closest non-disc golf tournament event that you can come to on the non-disc golf tour, the Disc Golf Expo in Boxborough, Massachusetts. I was there last year. Was this the fifth year or the fourth year that they have run?
Third year. Third. Yeah, it was amazing. For me, maybe not quite as amazing as last year, because last year I didn't know what to expect, and this year was pretty similar to last year. But no, day one, Saturday, just a wave of people excited to buy discs, get their discs signed, taking pictures, and just all around disc golf hype, disc golf excitement. Definitely made it feel like disc golf is on no decline whatsoever, but we are a healthy, growing sport and community. Yeah, awesome. Two huge rooms with disc golf vendors left and right and center. It is really fun. I'm really sad that you guys couldn't make it. I think
I'm going to do my best to come next year. I was talking to Ratana in the car saying, you know, I didn't go last year. Andrew wanted me to go this year. I think you wanted me to come this year. So I have to go next year. I'll put it on the calendar.
It's just a really good way to connect. They also have like seminar rooms where they do interviews. I did, for example, I did a live podcast with Andrew Fish for his Fish Golf broadcast. I told him the name of our podcast and he said, congrats. That he now has the second worst podcast name in disc golf. Obviously, Fish, joking. Shout out Andrew Fish. Always does a good job. But they do speeches and all kinds of stuff. Lots of educational stuff, of course. And just lots of hype. There were a lot of content creators there. You know, AB was there. Gannon Burr was there. Macbeth. Freaking Ken Climo was there. I bought a 3-pack of his, like, black and gold stamped the champ release that they had there. And every manufacturer is just bringing like their hot stuff. Like they have special releases, all kinds of vendors there with the coolest dies you've ever seen, all kinds of disc golf gear from swag to chalk bags to apparel. Mile Marker 63 was there, for example, as like representing their course and their business and their farm, selling like some of their farm stuff and some disc golf goodies as well. And we had the mini course set up again, where shout out to Meadowbrook Orchards, which is a local disc golf course that stepped up and made kind of unique, special mini basket positions where they like hung minis from like cut up apple trees or elevated the mini baskets on like an apple tree stump.
What? That is so
all around
cool.
just good vibes. And the amount of posts I've seen about this event, pretty next level. And the good news is everyone who missed out because they lived far away, Disc South is going to be the second iteration of the year for this Ooh. Expo in Dallas, another disc golf hotspot. And I think that's only like 5 or 6 weeks from now. It's actually the same weekend as the Supreme Flight Open, aka the chess.com from last year. So sadly, of course, a lot of pros will not be able to make it there. But even without pro attendance, I think there are enough great reasons to go and check it out and yeah, be part of something growing and special.
That's
so wild.
Shout
out Ben Kenny.
That's wild.
Intern Ben.
It's wild that we're all going to be there like 4 days there later, though. We'll all be in Dallas right after that.
I know. I think Ben had bad luck with that because he was trying to schedule it off of last year's schedule. And then when he found out, because obviously an expo like that has to be planned like a year in advance. And the Pro Tour schedule for this year was obviously not out then yet. So he was like really hoping that would line up with Waco or like the week before Waco. But it was 1 week too early and it was a bit heartbreaking for him. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, but
still
that
putting on the show.
Goes to show that it's totally fair. He just had to take a guess. I mean, at that point, there's nothing you can do. What did you say to Ken Klima? What was your interaction? What did he say? Does he recognize you, obviously? Or what would you tell him?
Yeah, I mean, we were all so busy the entire weekend, of course, so there wasn't much time for, like, real small talk between me and some of the other pros there because there were constant lines, constant conversations with the fans. So I kind of just snuck in. I think Klein was actually talking to James Proctor at the time, and I kind of just like snuck in and said, "What up, Ken? Good to see you." We did a little hug handshake. And I think later that day, I walked back to his booth and purchased that little 3-disc pack they were selling and had it signed by Klimo. Just kind of to stash it away and see how cool I will find that in like 20 years when I look back at my life. For me, it was an absolute no-brainer to buy that pack with the new Klimo discs and just stash it away to enjoy it later. I'm a big fan. For me, this whole Klimo announcement has been pretty freaking exciting.
I mean, crazy.
Go ahead, Joey.
He is the proof to the generation of touring pros that you are a part of, Simon. If he can continue to sell and be relevant post-playing, that bodes super well for the rest of your generation. Obviously, you guys aren't Ken Klimos. You don't have 12 world titles, but you do have large fan bases, and it is interesting to see.
Yeah. No, Ken Klimos proof of a lot of things, I think. Absolute champ.
What I want to know, coming off the Disc East Expo, obviously you were there with MVP, and you were showcasing the new Balance, or Balances, and they look really, really nice. Like, I was watching the video you shot with Gannon, and, I mean, spoiler, you beat the best player in the world with the new Balances. And I'm excited to give them a try. I think MVP is sending me some of the new versions. But do you want to talk a little bit about how those sold and also how you like them?
Yeah. As far as I know, that we sold all of them that we brought. And that was a pretty good amount of them. It was kind of crazy because the approach MVP takes to this expo is that they don't want to sell anything that their vendors are selling there. So there's like, let's say 50 booths total, and let's say 15 of those booths sell discs and also sell MVP products. MVP doesn't want to set up right next to them and basically right. take sales away from their own vendors. So basically the only thing we were selling was balances. We didn't have anything else. We had a really small box of your new disc, Eagle, the range, but those were gone within like 5 minutes because I think we only had literally 30 of them. And then day two, we sold the same amount, a tiny little box of the new Germ release, that Particle Glow Tempo, which feels so freaking
good. It feels
good.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah. I got myself a little stash of five of those, so I can't wait to try those once the weather here allows. But yeah, it sold really well. And the test I've done so far with the new balances was indoors, which only tells you so much. And of course, my round I played against Gannon in the snow and like 28 degrees at Meadowbrook. So I have a bit more of research to do, lots of more throws I need to get this balance tested properly. And what MVP actually did, I didn't post any of these videos yet, but when I unboxed these new versions, they sent me 35 balances. 17 version 3 and 18 version 2s. And they're all numbered. So I have number 1 through 35. And basically what they want me to do is throw all of them and tell them exactly which one I like the best. And because they've measured to the smallest degree all of those discs, those 35 options, and the one I like the best is the one they're going to consistently try to recreate. It's pretty nuts. But no, I'm really stoked for all the fans that got their hand on these and can be kind of part of the testing, because I can't wait to read reviews and ideas, what people think. Because, I mean, the differences are so minor.
So what number did the fans get?
No specific number. So there's two versions, which means two different molds. The core mold is the same in both. Only the rim is different. And it's like minusculely different, almost not even noticeable to the eye or to the touch.
Like, does it feel the same as the prototype pretty much to whoever would hold it?
In my opinion, yes. But when Paul Kranz felt them, he said he could instantly feel a difference. So I don't know. To me, every disc kind of feels the same, Eagle. You know that.
I'm in the same boat as you, Simon. I could not do the blind guessing thing that Eagle can do as well as he can do it. And some people can notice differences in discs that I just can't. I can't feel.
Yeah, I actually sent two of them to Colorado today.
Bodanza.
Yeah, Bodanza reached out, and that should get there on Thursday. So, Eagle, if you want a chance to try them, then maybe hit up Bodanza and see if you can be part of the testing.
We already talked about it. We're probably going to go film a video together.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really don't know. All the testing so far, I've been kind of a mix between they're still too overstable versus, oh God, no, they're too straight. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take a couple more throws and like some more real world conditions, because so far it's been kind of inconclusive.
Do you think that's the hardest kind of disc to hit right on the head, is like that dead straight? And I think obviously it's subjective, right? Because everybody has a different power level. So dead straight is different for every person. But I feel like it's easy to make overstable discs and it's easy to make understable discs, but having a disc like a perfect straight mid-range that just thrown flat, goes flat, finishes flat, and doesn't beat in off of two tree kicks.
Well, that's not really what he wants. I'd say, from my understanding, the hardest type of mid-range to make is straight with just a little bit of fade, because it's easy to make a mid-range with a lot of fade, and then there's so many straight to slightly understable mids, but to find that like perfect, straight, consistent mid-range that always finished just a little bit left, it's very rare to find that disc, in my opinion.
I totally agree. I think finding this sweet spot between... Well, another problem that I've noticed, two things I want to say real quick. When I'm testing a disc, for some reason, I want it to fly perfect. It's hard to describe, but when I'm testing a disc, I want it to fly like a little left to right and then a little right to left. It's like this perfect little S-curve, because that's what discs should fly like, kind of. So when I'm testing a disc and it doesn't do that, I feel like, oh, yeah, this is not quite what I was looking for. So I got to keep reminding myself that I want something that doesn't fly like that. And also, lost my train of thought. Sorry. Someone else will go over.
Oh, God. We're nerding out about discs, but yeah, Disc East sounds sick. I know me and Joey are hoping to be there next time. And hopefully by next year, it'll be even bigger and better. And I'm sure it will be, because it looks sweet. I definitely had a little bit of FOMO this week not being there. But I'm gonna do my best. Even though it is in cold, frigid Massachusetts in January.
Yeah, it's not colder than Colorado. The weather we had this weekend was beautiful. It was a little cold and a little snow on the ground, but I mean, you're indoors the whole time, so the
weather doesn't really matter. But I want to go
outside. Why?
Eagle, you
love being outside.
Eagle, you came very close to joining us last year. You were right on the edge.
Oh, I was real close.
But this was in the post-surgery Eagle mode. You were really focusing on shoulder recovery. But I went out very spontaneously last year and had a great time. And obviously, just so much networking. And I ended up with one big-time sponsorship because I just because I went there. Yeah, all those jerseys that you wore last year, Eagle, that like
Cardinal?
Made the way. Yeah, that was from me just going. I met Kevin through that, and I ended up selling over 100 of those jerseys last year, and that's just like the power of networking. So I have a huge.
That's the power of Joey Tamale right there.
I have a huge amount of respect for Ben, just getting all those amazing, talented people in the right place.
Wow.
All right. What's next, Joey?
All right. I am going to do a super quick, very non-disc golf related trivia question for Eagle and Simon. Oh. I saw this randomly on the internet a few days ago. I've told it to a couple people. Nobody has even come close to getting this right. And essentially, it is the difference between a million and a billion. A lot of people think they know the difference between a million and a billion. Do you know the answer, Simon?
Yes, I love this topic.
What's 1,000 million?
Right. Eagle probably knows it too.
Let's see if Eagle can do this. So a lot of people can't wrap their head around just saying a million versus a billion. Like that does not compute well in people's brains. So I want you to try to tell me how long is a million seconds.
Oh, I like finances, but I don't like math.
Well, just guess. You don't have to try to get it right.
A million seconds. Oh, gosh. Like.
So for reference, 1,000 seconds is 16 and a half minutes.
16 and a half minutes.
Yep, it's 1,000 seconds. So I'm asking you what a million is.
See, I don't like math.
Well, just wing it.
Okay, I'll say a day.
The answer is 11 days. So 11 days.
I'm way off.
Okay, all right. But this is the beginning. So now you have this point of reference. 11 days is a million seconds. So with that, I want you to take your best crack at what a billion seconds is in time.
That's going to be...
He's mathing hard.
I'm trying to math hard. Are you mathing hard? This is for both of us.
I think Simon knows
know
this
the answer,
answer.
Unfortunately,
you know the answer.
I've heard this question asked many times.
I've heard it, but I forgot. Okay, let's just say it's like 80 years or something.
Yeah, it's 32 years, 11,000 days, and it's you're actually the first person who guessed over. Almost everybody, when they hear the difference, they guess like 3 months, 4 months. And I just thought it's really interesting to notice the difference because I was nowhere close. I think I guessed like 3 weeks, and it's quite stunning to just like use that comparison in the rest of your life with other millions and billions.
Yeah, and think about the super billionaires having, you know, over $200 billion.
You like, didn't say it.
They're living in a whole different realm.
Mm-hmm. No, it really does put the difference in perspective from millionaire to billionaire. That is a massive, massive, massive difference in universe.
I liked it. I liked it, Joey. Thank you for blessing us with that.
Alrighty, let us continue on quickly. I will go through some news. We don't have a lot going on, but we do have something important to us. Our
New Zealand
teammate, Jeremy Colling, goes down under and in his second start in the MVP colors, takes down the win in a one-hole playoff against Ezra Robinson. Did you guys watch the coverage? Because I did.
I did as well.
I did as well.
Look at us.
We're all caught up.
You know what I even did? So they were playing the final round, you know, obviously on Monday in New Zealand, which is Sunday evening in Massachusetts. And it was like 11 p.m. and they had one hole to play. And I was on the live PDJ live scoring app, freaking trying to stay awake. My eyes were like shutting, but I was like so intrigued on if Jerm was going to pull it off. And then I fell asleep with them with one hole to play. And then I woke up the next morning and it just said tied. And I didn't know who won.
The PDJ said so bad when
like,
it comes
to ties.
It
didn't say who won. And then I had to wait the entire next day for the coverage to come out so I could finally watch the playoff. And then, of course, seeing a Jerm park this 550-foot hole with the disc I gave him.
Neutron panic?
Oh, my God.
No, plasma main.
Yeah, one of the...
Or was it Neutron?
No, it was the old run. It was old run of the Neutron Panics. So cool. And he also was putting with the white pixels that I gave him. And, yeah, it annoys me a bit that I'm so curious to watch him play. And, like,
I was the same way. I was looking because I wanted to see how many discs of mine he was throwing.
Was there any?
Yeah, he was throwing a Blue Dimension I gave him. I think he was throwing a Phase as well as a Range. But he, wow. I saw that he was throwing that Neutron Panic and Plasma Mayhem as well, which is he was throwing that a lot, which I was really surprised about.
Saw Proton Tesla in there. Saw the Total Eclipse Hex. He's throwing that. And obviously the Tempo.
He has a Watermelon Hex Volt as well.
Oh, yeah, the Bendy. Was it the Bendy James? The Bendy James? Or no, that was one of the James trails that he was throwing.
Yeah, it's like one of the ones with the buffalo on it.
Yep.
Like the balloon
I'm
trail.
I'm like openly against this whole thing that we're a team because at the end of the day, we're not a freaking team. We're all on our own out there. Us against the course. That's what it's all about. But somehow, even though in principle, I'm against calling us a team, it still feels like we're a team. Maybe I just need to stop saying that we're not a team. Like maybe we just are.
MVP is a team, and the rest of the companies, you can call them what they will. We're a team.
I think
team together, everybody achieves more, and that's what we're doing here at Team MVP.
That was the Eagle YouTube right there. That was the Eagle YouTube voice.
Yes, it was. Keep on dreaming.
I think that humans naturally want to find little communities to belong to. So even in an individual sport like this, like we naturally look to find ways to like find commonalities and then like have our people against your people. And I mean, that putt that Ezra hit on the last hole in the wind.
Dirty.
Like,
my gosh.
He absolutely took his full 30 seconds to like, totally granted with that crosswind and from 60 feet on a side hill and then just enough on the right to not go am side out and catches and then defers for the wind read to Jerm on hole one. I don't think that should go unnoticed. He defers to Jerm and Jerm goes, okay, steps up and parks it. And that is a way to win a playoff.
Sometimes it just goes down like that. Do you think, what was Germs feeling when Ezra hit that putt?
Of course.
Of course.
It's got to be of course.
That,
no, Ezra, shout out to Ezra. I think just the highlight reel of his putts in New Zealand the last 3 weeks could fill like a 5-minute video alone.
What's he putting with? Do we know what he's putting with?
It's a sonar. It's basically a recreated version of what he was previously putting with.
Yeah, yeah. DGA.
But yeah, I mean, that's congratulations, Germ. That's super cool. I mean, to play one tournament or two tournaments with a new bag and then win, that's against like a pretty stacked field. It's pretty awesome.
All right.
Does he have more MVP wins than you?
He does have more MVP wins than me.
But oh, God.
Not for long.
All righty. So I will get through.
Wait, you're playing a B tier soon?
No, I'm playing Elite Series.
Oh, okay.
All righty. The rest of the news, we have Jesse Nieminen re-signs on a 3-year deal with Castoplast, DGPT DGPT Rookie of the Year, Copenhagen Open champ. Ella Hansen signs a 2-year deal with Discmania and is promoted to the top team. Shout out Ella Hansen. Really, really, really fantastic FPO player. Rebecca Cox signs a 1-year deal with Latitude 64. Jake Hebenheimer signs a 1-year deal with Prodigy. So Prodigy is making some new additions to their core team. Nathan Queen signs a deal with Infinite Discs for this season. And the biggest news coming today, earlier today, Dynamic Discs announced the termination of both of their contracts to their top two players, Ricky Wysocki and Kona Montgomery. These were the helicopter ads when they got signed, the Bitcoin bonuses, the big money. This is when disc golf was in its prime. And yeah, a bit of a reflection on the way that the industry's gone post-COVID, and we will see where those players go. But obviously, that's a huge announcement coming out of Dynamic Discs.
Are they coming to MVP?
That would be cool.
That would be wild.
No, I was scrolling through some of the comments under Ricky's departure video, and one said, "Did Ricky leave in a helicopter?" And it just made me laugh. some of those comments were freaking ruthless.
I thought you don't read comments.
Yeah, not my own comment section that much, but you know, when there's something big coming, I like to see what the trend is in the comments, I'd say.
Yeah, it's crazy, it's but you know, kudos to Ricky still. He got 3 years out of Dynamic with a pretty massive contract, as well as the Bitcoin bonus. So he cashed in. And
oh, totally.
I think what I was reading is it was a mutual agreement. So I think I have no idea what was going on. So there could have been lawyers, but it seemed like it was a pretty clean break, because something like this could get messy if, from what I know of contracts. But I'm not going to speculate on it too much, but I'm glad to see it wasn't some messy legal battle or anything like that. So we'll see what happens with Ricky and Kona in the coming weeks. I imagine that it's probably pretty soon we hear something. Those two, and I don't even know who else has it signed somewhere. I think they're the last two. Oh, Joel Freeman. I don't know where Joel Freeman's going yet. But other than that, let's, you know, kudos to new opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that the I think that the disc golf industry, especially DD, it's changed a lot since they signed that deal with Ricky. I mean, they are now under House of Disc, which is a lot of different manufacturers together, and I can only imagine the internal reshuffling and hiring and firing and consolidation, and I'm sure that all of that merging together into what is now House of Disc eventually led to those mutual agreements with those players. I just think that the company that signed those deals changed dramatically over those first 3 years.
When Ricky was signed with DD, were they even House of Discs at that point?
No.
They might have not been.
No.
Yeah, so completely different company almost from my understanding.
All right, Eagle, do you have anything for us today?
Okay, I've been in a goofy mood today. I have two segments that we can go through. Do you want a spicy would you rather or unsolicited advice? Which one first?
Wait, let's do a would you rather. I'm in the mood for a spicy game.
Okay, these might be kind of amazing, so just prepare.
Is it disc golf related or no?
They're all more or less disc golf related, but
okay, let's go.
All right, first question: would you rather win a world championship every year but never make cash at any other event, or place top five at every event and finish last at Worlds every year?
The first one, absolutely.
Really? I'm absolutely the second one.
I would totally win the world every year. Are you kidding me? That would be a story that would transcend not just the disc golf world, but every other sport. That every sports fan would be interested in that story.
But your top five means you could win other events, and you're always placing top five and making probably more money, lead cards, just like always being more relevant and playing good.
Yeah, or you don't want the world to know what.
Do you want to play? Do you want to play bad every single week except one and win a world championship and then be miserable the rest of the time?
But you're telling me that if all I can do is retain my tour card for the next 15 years, I can break Ken Climo's record by accepting that deal. I could be a 15-time world champion by the time my career. I'm playing the long game.
Yes, you could, Joey. Yes, you could.
Gosh, that's a weird question.
It's a good one.
And I created it. Is that it? Do you want the next one?
Yeah. Yeah, let's go.
All right. Would you rather never miss a putt within 45 feet, or would you rather never throw OB again?
Oh, that's a classic one. I think I would win every tournament with either choice. So I'll just go with never miss a putt.
Same.
Never miss
that
a putt.
That sounds same. Easier on my back. Less bending down.
So I mean, the way I imagine this is you literally just walk up to your mini. You don't need to take any time, and you just throw it in there, and it goes in no matter what. Or you can just have you shank a shot off the tee, like going straight towards the out of bounds, and then an act of God, a miracle happens that brings you back in bounds. So which would, if I, after okay, elaborating,
wait. Like, can I choose the miracle? Like, could I like have like a bald eagle like deflect my disc and stuff?
Yes.
It's and for the putting, can I like do like fun putts like blindfolded or under the legs or sidearm or tomahawk or roller and they all go in?
As long as you step up to your lie with a putter with somewhat of an intent to make it.
Yeah, I'm team never miss a putt again. That sounds pretty fun.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I'd probably never throw OB again because I throw OB way too much. All right. Would you rather ace a hole in every round you play but immediately take a double bogey, or would you rather never bogey again but also never ace again?
Oh. Well.
The second one.
Never bogey again, but also never ace again.
Yeah, I have enough. I'm good.
But you would throw an ace every single round. But
yeah, you know what? I go for the ace.
But you'd immediately follow it up with a double bogey.
That's fine. I get enough double bogeys anyway. I'm used to it. It just equalizes the ace, right? So you're even par for two holes?
Right, but then you have your normal game aside from that.
But yeah, when I'm on featured cards, like the amount of content I would have to post to my channels, yeah, I'm going for that freaking ace every round. Like, how many rounds do we play a year? Like 20 times 3 and 80? A half?
Like 80 tournament rounds. Say
70 or 80 rounds. That is 80 aces.
That's pretty insane.
I'm making ESPN every week.
I want a compilation video of the next T-Pads drives for the entire season. When you, at that point, it's late in the season and you know that you're going to take a double bogey and there's just nothing you can do about it and the disc just shanks right out of your hand.
Even though I can't miss from inside 45?
Yep.
Yeah, all these are happening simultaneously. All right. Okay. These last two are a bit out there. Would you rather play? Would you rather play the final round lead card of the European Open with no clothes other than underwear, or would you rather play the final round with no shoes? And
wait, did you make this up, Eagle, or did you read this somewhere?
I made this up. And the important point here is you are starting the round leading the event.
But we're not... Okay, obviously both scenarios are literally PDGA illegal. So
they're
we're
illegal.
Pretending like it's not illegal.
It's not illegal in this hypothetical.
So if you have underwear, you get shoes, basically?
If you have underwear, you get shoes. And you can wear a hat as well.
Oh, yeah, because that's going to hide everything.
And this is the European Open, which, let's just say, it's a sunny day with a massive turnout.
Imagine winning.
Yeah, I would go no shoes.
Imagine winning.
Who wouldn't go no shoes?
I asked this question to Ritana, and she said she'd wear the shoes.
Okay.
Oh. But just think, winning the European Open with no clothes on.
You should have said like Fountain Hills or something with, or like, no, you should have said Nevin or Hornet's Nest with those super annoying, like rocky tee pads that would just tear your feet apart. Because European Open at least has like throwable turf pads on your feet. So I think I would go no shoes.
What do you think Ezra Aderholt's answer would be?
Oh my gosh.
If it was PDGA legal to wear no shirt, he would definitely wear no shirt. He would get tattoos of his sponsors and just rock it like that.
Oh gosh, imagine you have to like wear like temporary tattoos of your sponsor for that round.
I mean, if I had Ezra's body, I'd do the same thing.
Oh gosh.
That's freaking impressive.
All right, so both of you are no shoes.
No shoes.
Sadly for the fans, yes.
I'm going no shoes as well. All right, last question. Would you rather play the rest of your career with pebbles in your shoes or with a constant wedgie with underwear that are too tight?
That is both horrible.
Pebbles.
Of course they're horrible.
Shoe pebbles.
That's what this is supposed to be. Shoe pebbles.
Shoe pebbles.
No, I think I would go underwear. I gotta go underwear.
Really?
What do you mean, really? Both answers would be really.
They're both terrible.
No, shoe pebbles, like having hurting feet during disc golf is the worst. And just having a little wedgie, you know, that happens even with normal
underwear.
It's
a really bad wedgie.
Of course. Can I still make every 45-footer?
You can still make every 45-footer.
Well, then I'm in.
Mm-hmm. And if you're playing the European Open round with no clothes, you have a terrible wedgie the entire time. And everyone will see it.
And I get guaranteed one ace.
Is that the name of this episode? Is this the shirtless wedgie from 45?
Shirtless wedgie from 45. Guaranteed in. All right, that was my cursed would you rather. The first three were respectable, and then the last two was to get a laugh, and I think I succeeded. All right,
let's break up your segments.
Writing those down.
I'll do a quick unsolicited advice. It's not going to be anything like toe socks.
Wait.
Oh, I sold Joey.
No. What is he holding into the camera? You can take a guess. It is some lime green Toe socks. What the hell? How is it, Joey? How is it? We need a live review.
Okay. Day one, they did not go on easy. It was exactly what you and me feared, Simon. It was painstaking. But once you learn a little bit how to put them on and kind of get your toes in the right spot, they actually go on very fast. And the foot odor is gone. I'm not kidding. It has disappeared.
We're all making very shocked faces right now for the listeners.
It has totally disappeared. And I take my socks off at the end of the day, and I'm catch myself like going, and then I don't. There's nothing. There's nothing there. So I'm very impressed.
I'm ordering toe socks right now.
In GG.
In Gingy. They're a little bit spendy, the In Gingy ones, but there's also some on Amazon, but they're pretty thin. I think they're called V-Well. I have both, but I definitely prefer the In Gingy to the V-Well.
And Joey, has it started any like cute conversations or something for you or no?
I told somebody at my neurofeedback clinic that I'm going to that I had toe socks on, and it was really awkward. I kind of wished I hadn't said anything.
Did you go out of your way to say it?
No, she's listening to the show, so she knew that the episode is called Toe Socks.
Oh,
said,
she's
oh,
listening.
See, I already have toe socks.
Shout out neurofeedback.
Like, oh. Yep.
All right, I'm get just some toe socks. One more thing about the expo real quick. I had at least 5 people come up to me and say, "Hey, big fan of the podcast." So guys,
wow.
We are making waves.
We are making waves. MVP, you made that joke in episode 1.
Yeah, that's my running joke. I don't think it's a joke. I think it's actually a good tagline.
Tagline. All right, here's a good tagline. My unsolicited advice for this week is an AirTag. Very simple thing that you can pick up on Amazon, especially around the holiday season when they're having the Black Friday deals. I think I picked up 4 for around $60. And I throw one in my suitcase, which is really nice because it gives me some peace of mind when I'm traveling. I can always know where my suitcase is, whether it be on a flight. Sometimes, like, I'm thinking, oh, gosh, they might have not loaded my luggage onto the plane. But I can check where it's at, and that's just a good little peace of mind there. And the main reason I really love it is on my wallet, I have an AirTag holder. And that's a game changer because I'm pretty good about keeping track of my wallet, but there's definitely been a few times where it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I've lost it. And sure enough, it can play a little bit of a sound, or you can track it on your phone. It's a great little hack that makes your life easier, makes it so you won't lose whatever you hold dear. You can even get a little AirTag keychain for your keys, especially for me, traveling a lot. AirTag is an absolute no-brainer. Do you guys have AirTags?
No, thought about it a couple times, but never committed. I've actually, knock on wood, never lost anything of importance somehow in my entire life.
Oh, you're toast. You jinxed yourself.
I knocked on wood.
Are you sure it's wood?
Yeah, it's my new desk. It is wood.
Okay.
I got 2 AirTags this Christmas as a stocking stuffer. So these are my first 2. I imagine I won't use them a lot on the road until like the flying starts, basically. Right?
Right. Right. That, or you get an AirTag holder for your wallet. They actually make like credit card type holders that you can just slip in your wallet that has the AirTag in it, which I think it could slip into most wallets. It'd definitely be a little bit chunky, but there's a lot of different options for.
Do you have to charge those, or do they just last forever?
So I actually had to replace the battery a few weeks ago, but I just picked up some batteries. It's like those kind of like flat disc looking batteries, and it was pretty easy to change out. But I think you probably get about a year out of an AirTag before needing to change the battery.
not bad. Yeah, I'm. I don't know. Maybe I'll wait till I lose something and then I'll get my AirTag.
It's definitely for people who are constantly misplacing things. My girlfriend Ratana, she's lost her fanny pack multiple times, and she didn't have AirTag in them, so she had to rely on the good graces of the people who found her fanny pack. But now she's got AirTag in there, and there's peace of mind. Peace of mind, I tell you.
Very, very good advice. Thank you, Eagle. Should we do a quick Simon Wines?
I want a long Simon Wines. I read a comment on the last podcast, and one of the listeners really enjoyed it, and he believes that should be a center focus of the Crushed Pepper podcast. So, wine away, baby.
I actually, at the back to the expo, I had a couple people come up to me talking about pizza. Definitely a cute conversation starter.
Very cute. Okay.
I need to choose which one. My list is long, so I need to choose which one I want to go for today. All right. I am going to whine. Yeah, let's do this because I had a recent experience. I'm going to whine about mall food courts. I have two main things. First of all, why in the world does the same restaurant basically exist three times in every freaking mall food court? Like, there is this Thai table, and then the Beijing something, and then some other Japanese something, and they all sell the exact same thing. Some fried chicken, some fried beef, some fried pork, some rice, some noodles, and some veggies. And all, like, the exact same style, too. Not, I'm obviously not literally exact same, but basically the exact same. Every mall has these three places that sell the exact same things. Why is that? Okay, that's first. And second, I go to malls trying to eat somewhat healthy. Obviously, I'm not known for being like this healthy guy that will eat a salad and just the most organic thing I can find all the time. But how is it possible that some malls have decent options and then there's a McDonald's? And no one is in line at any restaurant except for McDonald's has like a 30-person line waiting for their burgers and fries. How is that possible?
They got everyone hooked.
I don't understand.
I think airports are the same way.
If it's in the airport, yeah, airport, malls, like McDonald's is freaking everywhere. And when the other food in the mall sometimes is actually halfway decent.
Quick question. Did you eat McDonald's when you were in Estonia?
Don't remember. Don't think so. No.
Okay. So my dad, Ratano, and I were sitting at this restaurant and we had a clear view of the McDonald's, like sitting outside Old Town Tallinn. And we're just sitting there and it's like 10 o'clock at this point. We see walking down the street Gavin Babcock, Gannon Burr, Sullivan Tipton. They're like, they got this walk about them. They're like, they look tough. They're like walking down the street. Like, yeah, we're in Estonia. And they're just walking like this stoic pace. Beeline straight to McDonald's. In Estonia, there's so many like cool restaurants to go try out. It's like,
yeah.
It parallels your whining about why everybody goes...
I'm not judging anyone for going to McDonald's. I've gone to McDonald's probably close to 1,000 times in my life. But how is it possible that in every mall, in every airport, McDonald's always has this insane line, even though there's, let's say, 8 other options that have zero line?
Simon,
it blows my mind. I hate standing in line, first of all. Like, how is it worth standing in line for McDonald's? Like, what? And also, it's literally the junkiest junk you can eat. Like, why is it like, you guys are Americans. Why is it like that? I don't understand.
You gotta watch the movie, The Omnivore's Dilemma. That's a documentary I think you need to see about why McDonald's is so addictive to so many people. I think that it is not just a complete coincidence that it seems like everybody is like moths to a flame towards McDonald's. It is not completely coincidental. There are definite things that are being done to that food to make you want it more.
I mean, if you're going out to the mall with your family and let's just say this, you're in Hollister, you're working up an appetite, then you go down and you're at PacSun. Then you go over to a Hot Topic. When you're in Hot Topic, you're thinking, you know, I could really go for a Big Mac right now. And everybody everybody has that thought, and then they just write to McDonald's.
And then little Timmy's crying because he's overheated, and what's the perfect solution? Oreo McFlurry.
And then you go to McDonald's, and then afterwards you go to Cinnabon for dessert.
No, I totally get it. I'm addicted to McDonald's. I haven't had McDonald's now in like 4 months, but like I am definitely or was addicted to McDonald's. I totally get the appeal, but the second I see 30 people or let's say 20, 15 people line waiting versus I could just go two steps further and get some rice and chicken and green beans, like that's like a no-brainer in my opinion. But maybe I'm just totally wrong and I'm whining for no reason. But also, can one of you explain this phenomenon with the three exact same restaurants in the same freaking food court? Like, why is that a thing?
Did
I observe that wrong? Is that not actually true?
I feel like there's a lot more there's a lot more nuance to this than you're portraying. I dare I say the Thai food, Japanese, and what other one? Beijing noodle or something?
I don't know.
Some granted,
Chinese place, some Japanese place, and some Thai place, but they're all selling basically the same thing.
Well, westernized Asian food can come across as very similar. And especially at a mall. So that's probably my take on it. It seems like it's the same because it kind of is. But yeah, they pick which one you want.
All right.
I've had a similar thought to you in a totally different context when I lived in South America when I was 18 years old. They have the traditional markets where everybody comes in and sells their product from the fields, from the farms, and it's all these women coming in with these bags of fruit and crops or potatoes. And it would always blow my mind in the sections of the markets. Like, you have the meat section and the vegetable section and the spices section, and there are women with identical setups. Like, not even the difference between Japanese and Chinese, like literally the identical setup, selling the same cucumbers, and it would be like 10 of these women back to back to back to back to back all the way down. And I'm sitting there thinking, how can they possibly make money? And so I asked one of them, and they told me, and I'm sure this is not the same with the malls, but for them, they all have the word of mouth relationships with specific customers, and it's like a loyalty thing. So when everybody going into those markets, they have their thing. So they have their thing, and they won't go to anyone else. So it's not like a product thing. It's like you only buy from that lady. So maybe in that sense, there could be some similar like, oh yeah, I'm only looking for my brand of thing. Because in the same way, if I see like a Chipotle versus a Qdoba, I will take a Chipotle every single time, even if they're right next to each other. No hesitation. And in the same way with like burger places, we all have our favorites for some reason. And every one of those billion-dollar companies is trying to become your favorite. And then they just know that if they're there, they'll take the favorites.
I know. Guys, quick disclaimer. I know that Japanese food and Thai food and Chinese food are completely different things. And if I go to a Chinese restaurant, it'll be very different from a Thai restaurant. I've traveled a lot. I know these things. I'm just saying, in a mall specifically, in a food court, they literally sell the same thing. It blows my mind, and I don't understand why. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
One of the craziest things, this has not really anything to do with it, but a little bit. I think it was Pasadena, California. There are so many mattress stores. It's unbelievable. And I've actually noticed this in a lot of other places. And there's a little bit of a conspiracy behind it. It's that they're money laundering operations. Like, if you go to Pasadena and see how many mattress firms there are within like a 3 mile radius, it's mind boggling. At least this was like back in 2018. And I think you can even pick up on this in other places. I think I even remember watching a YouTube video on it a long time ago. But it's kind of crazy if you just – I mean, I'm sure a lot of people will start looking for mattress stores now, and you'll realize, like, does there really need to be this many mattress stores? Because, like, don't most people just go to Walmart to buy a mattress at this point? But yeah, kind of on the same topic, but not really.
All right, moving on.
I have a hot take, a spicy take.
Spicy take. Whew.
I have been doing a lot of PT this off season on my right arm, my throwing arm, particularly working in the elbow area. All three of us have dealt with many different right arm injuries over our careers, and I had this thought the other day in PT, and I brought it up to my physical therapist, who knows nothing about disc golf, except for the stuff that I've told her. And my hot take is this: if you are a new player, a young player, or somebody brand new coming in and you have no prior throwing experience, I would push you towards learning right hand backhand and left hand backhand, and completely avoid teaching a forehand outside of touch and scramble shots, and only promote right hand and backhand dominance, like ambidextrous throwing. That would be, and I think that my hot take is I think it's better for your body in the long term. I think it leads to more left right power, having both ability. And I think if you haven't, it just, like, forehand is the number one cause of injury in the elbow. So I want you guys to tell me why that's a stupid take.
I don't think that's a stupid take. It's just going to take the one person to actually have an ambidextrous game to set a standard. Because what it comes down to is all the kids watching to start incorporating it, because that'll be the next generation. Like, as if it becomes a normal thing with disc golf that people associate, all right, I practice my right hand, I practice my left hand, then absolutely. But I will agree with you, and that's honestly, like, a long-term goal of mine, to have a very good left-handed throw. But there's something about having a forehand that's just more technical than a backhand in a lot of instances. I'm sure that if you put enough time in and if you had the right amount of talent, then lefty backhand, righty backhand, you could probably get it dialed in. But that's going to be a needle in a haystack cultivating that. But yeah, I think you have a good take there, honestly. And I'd promote it moving forward, because it's so hard on the body. You know, it's not just saving the forearm, but it's actually balancing out your body too.
That was my other reason.
Right. So it's like you put wear and tear on right side, and disc golfers are victim of this. My right side is way stronger than my left side. And if you look at bowling, that's even more exacerbated. Just, it's insane. Some of these guys look like they have lobster arms. It's unreal. But
same with professional tennis players. If you ever see pictures of the top tennis guys with their two forearms right next to each other, their tennis arm is double the size.
What about darts? This is a pseudo darts podcast.
I don't think there's a lot of muscle on those guys. There's not a lot of muscle going on there.
But yeah, I think if you can, like, I'll throw some lefty shots in practice, just like, oh, you know, I've been throwing a lot right-handed. Let's throw some lefty shots for fun, but also just to put a little bit of wear and tear on the left side to try and make an effort to balance things out.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that was said. There was a phase where I was committed to teaching myself to throw lefty, but then I fell off of my one wheel and bruised my left ankle, and then I couldn't plant on it anymore for like 2 or 3 months. So that kind of put a halt to that entire project and life goal. But no, it's been something I've been thinking about for a long time, because my forehand has clearly never been anything really that impressive or helpful to my game. So I think you're right. I think game-wise and health-wise, longevity-wise, it is only a good idea to do that. It might take discipline, but I'm going to look something up real quick that this reminds me of, because I have to give a shout out. And this is the little mini documentary, disc golf related, that I watched this weekend because I ran into this person at the expo, and it's called Another Stab at Life. Have you guys heard about this or seen it?
I have not, no.
All right, I'm just going to open this real quick and see if I can find his name so I can properly say this. I forget his name. Okay, I can't see his name right now. Anyway, it's on YouTube. It's called Another Stab at Life, full short documentary. It's only 11 minutes long, and it's about a Boston disc golfer who on St. Patrick's Day years ago was stabbed in the head.
Oh my gosh.
In a subway station and lost control. I mean, it was horrible. Obviously, he almost died. He had a crazy stroke. He was 5 days in a coma, and he was told by the doctors that he would probably never walk again, probably never talk again. But he made a pretty miracle recovery. Miraculous would be the right word in this case. And basically the main thing that he lost control of in his body was four of his fingers in his right hand. And obviously he was a right-handed thrower. And he loved disc golf so much that he somehow made it back to the course and started throwing lefty. And it's really, really cool to see how disc golf brought him back from this crazy life event. And this documentary called Another Stab at Life is really cool. It's a really, really crazy story. And he talks about that he has, I think it's 6 or 8 hole-in-ones. And they've all been post-injury and all with his left hand, wow. Even though he's a righty. Which, wow. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I wish I could definitely find his name right out now.
But, we'll put his name down in the description of this episode. So for those of you listening, just go check that out. I think if you're a kid out there or you have a young one getting into the sport, I don't know, give us a try and call us in 15 years. Tell us how it worked out with the backhand. I think that learning touch forehand is important because scrambling is so forehand dominant, in my opinion, and learning to throw a forehand roller, I think those are really important. But for anything above 50% power, I would say that not using a forehand is going to be hugely beneficial to the longevity in the game. So if you're determined and disciplined and interested in this theory, I'd love to see somebody put it to the test and see how it works out. Because I think if you could get to the top with that skill set, you would be a little bit like a Shohei Ohtani in disc golf. You would be like the first kind of two-sided player.
Who's that?
You don't know who Shohei Ohtani is?
I have no idea who that is.
Simon?
I definitely... Joey, I know 0 American athletes of all time.
He's not American.
I mean, American League. Is he in an American League?
Football? You mean... Man, no. He's baseball. Major League. Major League Baseball.
Yeah, he plays in an American league. That's what I meant. I've followed 0 American sports, unfortunately, in my lifetime.
So, Shohei Ohtani is a Japanese baseball player who plays for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he is notable for obviously being super talented, but he's notable for the fact that he hits and pitches, which is super rare in baseball. It happened a long time ago in the early days, but in the last 70 years... basically non-existent. So he is essentially being heralded as the best baseball player of all time because he's already won 4-3 MVPs and he won the World Series and he's a two-way player. And so that was sort of what I was thinking about with this.
I might have heard of him
backhand.
Now that you say all this.
Yeah, he is the man in baseball. If you see anybody in baseball right now, he is the face of it. And yeah, I mean, he totally shocked the whole world of baseball when he came in and could do both at a high level. And so in that same like idea, somebody coming in with, like, imagine somebody coming in with 500 plus feet of power in both directions with accuracy. That would be very hard to design against.
Oh my gosh, it'd be unreal. That was like my goal for a period of time, but now it's like it just takes so long to, like, you can get power somewhat quick on a lefty backhand, but to get that fine motor skill of control, that's just, you got to put so much work in. Like, I think about all the work I've put into my right-handed backhand, and it's still not where I want it to. And that's a lifetime of throwing, basically. So it's a tall mountain to climb, but I think it could be worth it.
I do think that trying things with your offhand can give you some, like, little light bulbs about things on your dominant side. I took a couple weeks off from any sort of right arm movement earlier in December, and I really wanted to play darts, so I played with my left hand. And there were actually some epiphanies I had by forcing myself to actually think on using my opposite side, that I, when I was able to come back and use my right arm, I made some adjustments that got my accuracy way up. So I would highly encourage anybody out here listening who's interested in trying non-dominant disc golf, I would highly encourage it to anyone at any level.
For sure. And also make sure to go check out the Another Stab at Life documentary, because I want to go watch that once we're done recording here, because that sounds pretty awesome, and another testament to how disc golf can give you a purpose in life and bring you back and allow you to do something you love even when you face some extreme adversity.
Yeah, it's definitely 11 minutes well spent. Highly recommend. Okay, guys, good.
Good.
I have one thing that I've been meaning to mention on this podcast. Obviously, we're all team MVP. But we're also a part of another team.
Backstage Organics?
Backstage Organics.
Let's go. I see they always share our episodes on Instagram. That's
yes.
Amazing.
I just want to make it clear that this is Team Backstage Organics as well. They're spreading the word of organic food across the nation via disc golf as well as music. And you can look forward to some Backstage Organic hauls at some point this season, potentially with all three of us. There was a little teaser back at Music City this past year. It was me and Joey doing an unboxing, and Simon was giving his commentary in the background. But now it's official. We can all give our commentary officially as team members.
Very sneakily, one of my favorite sponsorships of the 2024 season. I did not expect that much out of it, and it was massively beneficial. And it honestly just put my mind in the right thinking. I wasn't doing enough cognitive thinking about eating right, and just having that benefit, like having that available to me every week, was a huge win.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that he preaches organic, and you know, organic can be a controversial topic to a lot of people, but the way I see it is you're supporting smaller farmers, mom and pop shops, and that's why I really strive to buy organic mostly. And you know, even going to local farms and sourcing your food from there is the ideal highest standard. And if you have the ability to do it, I highly recommend it. But shout out to Uncle Scoot at Backstage Organics for facilitating some amazing partnerships throughout the season, keeping us healthy and having us eat some yummy food. So shout out Backstage Organics.
That was like a freaking ad read. Nice.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
No, it wasn't an ad read. It's me being grateful.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Shirtless Wedgie from 45.
Shirtless Wedgie from 45. Is that what we're calling it?
Well, I have a different one. My name for this episode could be Lobster Arms.
Lobster Arms.
Shirtless Wedgie is a little out there.
Yeah, we already did. That's, we already my did calling toad card. Socks and bad pizza. I'd say we could do Lobster Arms.
Joey, are you okay with lobster arms, or do you want to go all out with the shirtless wedgie?
Every week I'm going to put an out there name up, and one week it's going to get chosen by the group, and that will be the best week. This week we can do lobster arms.
Can we, or we could do a modified version of shirtless wedgie from 45. You could just
just shirtless from 45?
Or you could be playing with no clothes on Lee Card of European.
nice little short one there. No. All right, thank you. Lobster arms it is, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Good to see you guys. I'm excited for next week. We have 4 weeks until we will meet in Florida. So let's make a count. And that's all from me.
I'm stoked. Thanks for listening, everybody. Keep on dreaming, and peace. No clothes at a major? ? Okay, let's do lobster arms.